for the toy were the plans to the Empire State Building. Glenn unfolded the aluminum risers that would eventually hold the rail system.
He loved this thing.
We all loved this thing, Jason said. Especially when Grandpa was around. Remember how he used to disappear in another room and fill the empty cars with candy and tell us it was Santa's elves?
I miss that man.
I miss them all, Trent said. Glenn patted Trent's back. He'd always blamed himself for their parents' accident. He'd found out that the woman he thought he loved, the woman he had considered marrying, was already married. He asked his father to fly her home, and their mother had gone with him since it was a night flight. The plane went down, killing all three of them on board. Jason looked over the mess they were making, which would eventually be magical.
Not to sound all mystical and stuff, but it feels like they're here.
Trent's eyes welled, and Jason looked away, pretending he didn't notice. His own throat clogged with emotion. Glenn cut the melancholy.
Yeah, and Dad is laughing at how long it's taking us to get this up.
Right. Half an hour later, Jason took a break to check on the progress outside. A lighting service was there with two cherry pickers, and a team of five guys was tacking Christmas lights along the eaves lines. Nathan played foreman and made his way to Jason's side.
This makes me smile, lad.
It's a lot of work.
Celebrating our good Lord's birth is worth it, don't you think?
This would be easier if this place wasn't so big.
But it wouldn't be your home.
True, he'd never lived in a modest home, ever. His thoughts turned to Rachel. Was she a tree and lights kind of woman, or did she have Santa throw up everywhere? Or maybe she didn't do anything at all. He dialed her number to find out. Hello? She sounded surprised.
Good morning.
It's 1 o'clock.
Good afternoon, then.
She laughed, the kind of nervous laugh that said his call may have flustered her. He liked that thought.
I was wondering about something,
he started.
Oh? Yeah, I was calling to see if you were a decorate-the-house-for-Christmas-like-it's-a-department-store kind of person, or a simple tree and string of lights and call it done.
He heard her take a deep breath. You're calling me to find out how I decorate for Christmas? He considered how that sounded.
I called to hear your voice. Christmas lights were my excuse.
She muttered something he didn't quite get. You're making me blush.
Good.
I haven't given it much thought, she told him. I probably should.
He thought of her son. Kids like Christmas.
Right. Oh, geez, I should probably get a tree. Her playful tone was replaced by distress.
Did you bring your decorations with you on the move, or are you buying new?
I need to go shopping.
That answered that. You sound stressed.
I have a lot to do. This Christmas will be hard enough on Owen. I need to make it as normal as possible.
That means a tree.
It sounded as if she were talking to herself.
And presents, like from Santa. I'm sure he doesn't believe in Santa, but I should probably still make the effort.
Right?
Was she asking for his opinion? I'm sure your son knows the big man in the red suit is really just you.
My what? Oh. No. Owen isn't my son.
It was Jason's turn to be surprised. He's not?
Rachel paused. His mom, Emily, was my best friend. She... Jason closed his eyes, knew what was coming. Cancer, rare and aggressive. She asked me to take care of Owen when she died. Not that she needed to.
I'm sorry.
I told you my life was complicated.
And I like complicated.
He wasn't sure that was completely true, but he was sticking to his words. She passed in May.
Between the move, my new job, and taking on Owen, Christmas decorations haven't entered my mind. He thought about how long it had taken for the Fairchild men to redecorate after the loss of their parents. It's not a priority. Yeah, it is. Owen is still a kid. He had to grow up a lot after M. I need to make this work.
I'm sure you'll do fine.
I'm guaranteed to screw it up. But I have to try. Do tree lots deliver? I don't even know what a tree costs. She was doing that talking to herself thing again. He thought of the tree arriving later that day for the family room. The cost of the thing almost matched the delivery fee because of its size.
I have a truck.
I couldn't ask you.
You didn't ask.
Silence.
I was going to ask you out for dinner, but tree shopping was my second choice.
Crickets? I haven't dated since Owen, she told him. I don't know how this fits.
It's tree shopping. Bring Owen along.
I don't know.
Wednesday night, he said. Just a friendly thank you from the stranger you met on the side of the road. Practical, since I have a truck.
It was actually Nathan's truck, but he wasn't about to split hairs over it.
Wednesday?
She was considering it.
I'll bring a thermos of hot cocoa.
She laughed.
Okay.
Jason hadn't worked that hard for a first date in years. Most women jumped.
7?
7 should work.
I'll see you then.
After he hung up, he gave a celebratory fist to the air. He turned to go back into the house and found Monica watching him from inside. She questioned him with her eyes. He waved and walked back around the house to avoid any questions. It was almost as if Jason's mention of Christmas illuminated the holiday in Technicolor. Everywhere Rachel went after his call screamed Santa. Thanksgiving had been rather low-key, a meal at a restaurant, a few tense moments when Owen went to bed early and Rachel heard him crying in his room. There hadn't been many of those times since they'd moved to the East Coast. But they happened enough to remind them both of their loss. Every month proved easier. The grief counselors told her that the first set of holidays would be the hardest, which meant Rachel needed to do everything in her power to allow Christmas to live. She'd spent a lot of time in Emily's condo during the holidays. She always had a tree and really loved red and white lights. Rachel hadn't really bothered. A tabletop tree, if she remembered, and the presents she'd buy were store-wrapped to perfection. The single woman in the group didn't do the entertaining, so decorating wasn't a priority. She pulled into her driveway and stared at her house. She'd never strung Christmas lights in her life. How hard can it be? She asked herself. With her arms loaded with groceries, she looked up the street to see one of her neighbors standing on a ladder, hammer in hand. Across from him, another man was blanketing his shrubs in a netting of lights. Yep, Christmas was everywhere.
Owen?
Yeah?
Help with the groceries. Footsteps down the stairs followed her request. He brought in the rest of the bags and helped her unpack. He opened a package of cookies from the in-store bakery before putting one thing away.
Hungry?
She asked.
Always?
He was past the age to tell him not to make a meal out of sugar. Most of the time, he policed himself, anyway.
Where do you think we should put the Christmas tree?
She asked as they moved around the kitchen, putting things away.
Christmas tree?
Yeah. She watched him from the corners of her eyes. In front of the window, in the corner of the living room.
We're getting a tree?
She looked straight at him.
It's Christmas time, isn't it?
He pushed open the door leading to the living room, cocked his head to the side.
In front of the window.
Smiling, she said. Jason volunteered his truck to help us out on Wednesday.
Stranded car guy?
Yeah. He met her eyes, didn't look away.
He likes you.
Maybe.
He sent you chains.
Nothing screamed romance like snow chains.
Which was very thoughtful.
Have you given more thought to taekwondo? She mentioned the free lessons after the football game. He said he'd think about it.
We'll see after Wednesday. If the guy ends up being a jerk, I don't want to take anything from him.
That's a good rule to follow.
Not that she'd give back the chains. She needed them. Later that night, after she and Owen had made a trip to a big box store in search of lights and glass balls for the tree they planned on putting up, Rachel tackled the door leading to the kitchen. What she first thought was charming now became a nuisance. It took a hammer and a flathead screwdriver she used as a battering ram to knock the bottom hinge free. The top hinge proved more difficult. As she pounded away, she estimated the weight of the solid wooden door. She cautioned herself to wait until Owen was home from his friend's house, but decided against it. Like every home repair she'd managed since moving in, she did it herself, even if it took three times as long. There was a sense of accomplishment about it. Having lived in a turnkey condo most of her adult life, there wasn't anything to fix, and if something did break, she'd always called someone. Now that she was playing caretaker for Owen, she needed to watch what she spent, and that meant checking out a crap ton of YouTube how-to videos. Em had left Owen what money she had. Social Security kicked in a monthly check, all of which was funneled into a college account. The money Rachel didn't spend on repairs was for Owen's future car, insurance, which she knew would be steep, and all the other crap that came along with taking care of a teenager. At this point, she wasn't struggling, but that was due in part to frugality. She knocked at the stubborn top hinge as years of rust sprinkled to the ground. 15 minutes of pounding later, the pin pulled free. To her surprise, the door didn't fall to the ground. It stayed in the same location, as if suggesting she was a fool for trying to remove it. Rachel stepped down from the tiny stepladder she had and grasped the door with both hands. She shoved. Nothing moved. Apparently, the rusty pins weren't keeping the door in place. The weight of the door kept the hinges fused. She used the hammer to knock away at the hinges, wiggling the door after every swing. Giving up wasn't an option. With her luck, the damn thing would fall in the middle of the night and give her a heart attack. Finally, an hour into what should have been a 10-minute job, the door broke free. Unfortunately, she caught it with the side of her head. She managed to keep from crumbling under it and not so gently set it aside. Her forehead above her right eye screamed. When she removed her hand, she expected to see blood, but didn't. In the downstairs bathroom, she checked the damage. Already a goose egg formed, which meant she was going to have a black eye by Monday. Her first impression on the owners of the company she worked for, and she was going to look like she took a punch in a bar fight. She left the door where it lay and filled a plastic bag with ice. Maybe the cold would mitigate the damage. The ice hurt, and her forehead already felt as if a skipping stone sat under the surface of her skin.
"Know your limits, woman," she told herself.
Her intention was to take the heavy door to the basement, but she decided the trip down the old stairs would be pushing her luck. Ice in hand, she picked up her mess, except for the door, and admired the difference with it gone. Then she noticed the casing and layers of paint that needed to be scraped free. The kitchen cabinets on the other side of the wall. Could they go? It would work so much better with the space completely opened up. Removing the cabinets would probably result in stitches. Good thing Jason was helping with the tree.
Jason. If he had a truck, chances were he had a ladder.
She checked the time, decided it wasn't too late for a text. Do you have a ladder I can borrow? It wasn't until after she pressed send that it dawned on her that she was asking a favor of a man she'd known for 3 days. When Jason didn't respond right away, she wondered if he was out on a date. It was Saturday night.
I do, and you can. Why do you need it?
Perfect. One last thing she needed to buy. Christmas lights.
You're putting them up?
Her hand traveled to her head. Between Owen and I, we can manage.
Do you want me to bring it by tomorrow?
Wednesday is fine. Maybe by then she'd be able to cover any leftover bruises up with cosmetics.
I'm looking forward to it.
I am too. Chapter 5. Owen laughed every time he looked at her. The swelling had reached its height by Sunday morning, and by the afternoon, the red and purple weren't colors she was going to cover with foundation. Wearing dark sunglasses when it was raining stood out just as much as a bruised face.
It's not funny. One look at you and stranded car guy is gonna run the other direction.
Men aren't that shallow.
Yes, they are. Lita had a massive zit right on the tip of her nose, and Lionel didn't ask her to the winter formal.
Zits don't last forever.
It was huge! Not as big as that thing you're growing on your head, but close.
He started laughing again. It will be better by Wednesday.
You keep telling yourself that.
Rachel laughed. Your mom used to say that all the time. They both stopped talking, locked in a memory.
I miss her,
Owen said quietly.
I do too.
Sure enough, Monday morning was met with a massive headache and her right eye swollen and bluish purple. Her rainy commute added to her stress, especially when she barely made it to her office chair before she was officially late. She and Julie had planned to arrive half an hour early to go over their PowerPoint one more time before they presented it to the owners of the company.
What happened to you?
Julie exclaimed. I had a fight with my kitchen door. The door won.
You're not kidding. Should you even be here?
Today is a big day. Otherwise, she would have called in. Her headache alone was hitting migraine level.
I might try and cut out early. I'm sure no one would complain.
From the looks she'd received walking in, Rachel knew no one would. Julie pushed away from her desk.
Let's get everything set up in the conference room.
Their meeting was set for 8:30 sharp. Gerald arrived a few minutes early, took one look at Rachel, and scowled.
What the?
Don't ask, Rachel said. Julie laughed.
Her kitchen door beat her up.
What? It's a long story. It wasn't, but she didn't want to go into it.
We can postpone this.
Gerald offered. As bad as this looks, she pointed to her face, postponing is worse. Besides, maybe the owners will see that I'm willing to take one for the team.
Whatever you say.
Gerald took his seat when the three members of the advertising team walked in. Julie ran interference by telling everyone about her door punch. Rachel ignored the giggling and willed her stomach to settle. She'd really wanted to go into this meeting poised and confident. As much as she knew her presentation was exactly what the company needed, delivering the message and selling it to the CEO and CFO didn't need the distraction of a bruised face getting in the way. There were only two chairs left that needed filling, and it was 8:35. When she heard voices behind the closed conference door, she turned around to gather her strength. Public speaking was easy for her. She knew her material, but damn, her head hurt, messing with her psyche. A chorus of good mornings spread around the room. Rachel sucked in a breath, blew it out slowly.
You remember Julie Kim, Gerald said.
Rachel painted on a smile and turned.
And this is our newest member of the team. Rachel?
Maybe the hit to her head was harder than she thought.
Jason? What the hell happened to your face? What the hell are you doing here?
Jason stood beside another man, close in stature, their power suits perfectly pressed, not a hair out of place. He was just as easy to look at as she'd remembered.
You two have already met?
Two giant steps, and Jason was at her side, his hand reaching up to brush her hair back. The gesture and the concern on his face would have wooed her if he wasn't standing in the middle of her office doing it.
She had a fight with a door,
Julie said from the side.
Have you had this looked at?
Jason asked. Rachel shook him off.
No, what are you doing here?
The room was perfectly silent, and the seed of doubt spread in her gut. She glanced around. The man Jason had walked in with had his hands tucked in his pockets as he rocked back on his heels, a mischievous grin on his face. The advertising team was exchanging glances. Julie looked at her and shook her head. The hidden message she was attempting to send was lost on Rachel.
She felt sick.
Gerald was the only one who found his voice.
Rachel, this is Jason Fairchild.
Fairchild? She blinked several times, trying to register everything coming in at one time.
Stranded car guy? Her Wednesday night tree-trimming date? Was her boss?
She closed her eyes, shook her head. No. This isn't...
She was thinking out loud.
Are you okay?
Gerald asked. She opened her eyes, pushed her chin in the air.
I think you should sit down,
Jason suggested.
How could he be her boss?
I'm fine. Her tone was harsher than she meant.
This is highly entertaining.
The man with Jason approached.
I'm Glenn. Fairchild. Jason's brother.
Rachel attempted to compose herself, reached out to shake Glenn's hand.
Rachel Price, it's a pleasure.
It sure is.
The staff in the room started to mutter among themselves. She took advantage of the noise and leaned closer to Jason.
Why didn't you tell me you were my boss?
He leaned in.
You didn't tell me where you worked.
Glenn started laughing.
Now that the introductions are formally done, should we get started?
Gerald moved them along. Rachel couldn't help but glare at the man she was supposed to be impressing.
Fine.
A long drink of water later, she asked that Julie dim the lights, which didn't help much to hide the man staring at her. The fact that he sat at the head of the conference table, directly opposite her, his smirking brother to his right, Gerald to his left, made her acutely aware of the fact she'd flirted with her boss. Her boss. She stopped looking at him and started to speak.
What the hell happened to her?
It looked like she'd been punched. Her eye was swollen damn near shut. She kept rubbing her temple, a sure sign it hurt. He had a strong desire to pull her out of the meeting to quiz her and make sure a doctor had given her a clear view of her health. Glenn kicked him under the table. Jason glared. His brother nodded toward Rachel, making him aware that he wasn't listening to her new approach to online marketing.
So, if we're going to capture the millennials and push Fairchild Charters to the top of the private jet food chain, we need to spend a serious effort online.
The image on the screen showed early 20-somethings holding cell phones while sitting in a bar. For the next hour, Rachel offered an impressive array of facts, including the sheer number of kids under 25 who were self-made millionaires. Many of them living in Silicon Valley, working for companies such as Google and Yahoo, both companies that had their own fleet of jets, but didn't offer them to everyone. Rachel suggested frequent trips and networking with these companies and other tech enterprises to encourage private charters as an alternative for their travel needs. It helped that she had worked with these businesses when she lived on the West Coast. All in all, the presentation was well thought out and left room for very few questions when she was finished. Jason was impressed. If we start rolling out my plan now, we should see a bump in charters by early summer. By fall, I'd like to see Fairchild Charters land a corporate account with Yahoo, Google, or Amazon. Or all three, Julie added. I won't oversell that idea, but it's worth a try.
You already have contacts in Palo Alto?
Jason asked.
I do.
She didn't offer more.
I like it,
Glenn said.
We'll need our team to create a budget.
The big accounts are obviously where it's at, but the long-term plan with young CEOs will be our bread and butter in 10 years,
Gerald added.
I think Miss Price has given us a lot to consider.
I want to see more numbers,
Jason told them.
Projections on how much staff will be needed, cross-training cost.
We can do that,
Rachel assured him.
She rubbed the side of her neck and quickly looked away.
I'd like a report in 2 weeks.
I can do it in one. His gaze traveled to her bruise.
2 weeks is fine. It is the holidays.
She winced. Glenn stood and someone turned up the lights.
Thank you, Rachel.
Julie?
Glenn told them.
Our pleasure.
Julie spoke for both of them. Julie patted Rachel on the back while Jason's advertising team funneled out of the room.
Progressive thinking.
Gerald stood in front of him, cutting off the view of the two women whispering.
You said the new blood we'd hired was coming to us with innovative ideas,
Jason said.
Rachel knows her stuff.
How do you know her?
Glenn asked Jason. Jason looked around Gerald, wanting to catch Rachel before she left the room.
Long story.
Glenn chuckled.
Great. You can tell me over lunch.
Gerald and Glenn left the conference room together. Julie and Rachel started toward the door.
If I can have a minute,
Jason said. Julie looked between them, muttered something, and left them alone. Rachel set her laptop down.
Why didn't you tell me you were Jason Fairchild?
It wasn't intentional.
You're my boss.
Technically, Gerald is your boss.
You own the company.
It doesn't change anything.
She looked at him as if he had an IQ of 5.
It changes everything. I can't have my boss texting me for personal reasons.
Gerald's married.
Did she just growl at him? Dating the man who signs my checks is the fastest way to lose my job.
Glenn is married, too. Technically, he signs your checks.
This isn't a joke, Jason.
He knew it put a ripple in his plans, but that wasn't going to stop him.
I like complicated, remember?
She waved a finger between the two of them.
This can't happen. I need this job. I need to make things work here for Owen. Sleeping with the boss is never a good idea.
So she was already picturing him in bed.
He liked that.
Stop smiling!
She raised her voice.
Did you see a doctor for that?
He purposely changed the subject.
No, it's just a bump.
It's a knot, and it should be checked.
I'm pretty sure if it were serious, I would know by now.
Do you have a headache?
She rolled her eyes.
Of course. There is a golf ball under my skin.
Are you eating?
Are you my mother?
Her evasion of his question gave him the answer.
I'm your boss, as you keep trying to point out. And if you're not well enough to be at work, you should be at home, resting, after you've seen a doctor.
Would you be telling me this if my cell number wasn't in your phone?
He didn't answer.
Exactly. Which is why we can't date.
We can date.
She tried to smile, huffed out of breath.
I'm sorry. I'm flattered. Really, I am. I'm attracted, obviously, or I wouldn't have... But I'm not stupid.
Yeah, well, that made one of them.
Jason took a step toward her and stopped her rant with his lips. He could almost taste her simmering anger as it softened.
Rachel gasped, but didn't pull away. He touched her cheek and held her close. Oh, yeah. This was going to happen. When was the last time he'd had butterflies when he'd kissed a woman? When was the last time one had reluctantly melted in his arms? She opened her lips, and her tongue dipped inside his. All the blood in his system dumped south before Rachel pulled away. Her face was flushed, her breathing too quick. Accomplishment settled in his system. She stared at him without words. Rachel. She pressed a finger to his lips before gathering her computer and walking out the door. The inquisition began the moment Rachel returned to her desk. Julie rolled her chair over, ducked her head.
How do you know Jason Fairchild?
He's stranded car guy.
The guy you ran off the road?
I didn't run him off the road. He tried to go around. In an Audi.
A really nice Audi,
if she remembered. He acted a little familiar for a guy you helped stay out of the cold, Julie said. Rachel glanced over Julie's head, didn't see anyone watching them.
We've been texting all weekend. He left chains for my car at the house on Friday. He was going to help Owen and me get our Christmas tree on Wednesday, since he has a truck,
she whispered. Julie squealed. Rachel shushed her.
Stop it! That can't happen now.
Why not?
He's my boss. I can't date my boss. Every great soap opera has a chick doing her boss.
Rachel glared, whispered harshly,
I'm not doing anyone.
Rachel? She swung her head up too quickly, winced at the pain behind her eye. Gerald stood a few feet away, his expression unreadable.
Yes? How much of their conversation had he heard? This wasn't good.
Good job today.
Thank you.
He looked at her forehead.
That looks like it hurts.
It does, which is why I got off to a shaky start. I promise my delivery is smoother than what you saw.
It appeared there was more than one reason for that wobbly start.
She wasn't sure how to respond. Gerald was.
Cussing at the owner of the company probably didn't help.
I cussed? Seeing Jason there blocked her common sense.
You did,
Julie said. Rachel closed her eyes, tried to replay what happened.
It won't happen again.
Not in public, anyway. That's probably for the best,
Gerald told her.
Now, why don't you celebrate by going home early and nursing that black eye?
It's okay, I'm...
That wasn't a request, Rachel.
She stopped talking, and Gerald returned to his office.
I cussed?
She asked herself again. Julie just laughed. Chapter 6.
You ended up in a ditch.
Jason knew he would never hear the end of this. He managed to get out of lunch with his brother, but that didn't stop the man from showing up in his office after 2.
I'm not proud.
Glenn leaned back in the chair he offered himself when he walked in.
Are you dating this woman?
Jason flipped through the work on his desk, wondering how to answer that question.
Was he dating her?
No.
Did he want to?
Yes.
Did he want his brother to know?
Maybe. Glenn was obviously amused.
Well, then, this should put Monica and Mary off the matchmaking campaign.
Jason looked up.
There's a campaign? Not anymore.
Glenn unfolded from the chair. He knew his brother's wives were up to something.
No blind dates, Glenn. As if I need to say that aloud.
I told Mary that.
Somehow Jason didn't think she listened. Both of his brothers were hopelessly in love with their wives.
Rachel does have some great ideas for pushing the company forward.
I thought so, too.
She's obviously dedicated. Coming to work with that shiner?
Jason went back to the paperwork on his desk.
I already saw to it that Gerald sent her home.
Glenn hesitated at the door.
Risk management would advise you not to date someone on staff. So would our lawyers.
He'd had a few hours to think about that fact.
Rachel said the same thing. She's a smart woman.
And beautiful, and witty, and someone he wanted to know better.
Their advice isn't going to stop you,
Glenn said.
Not this time.
God, she loved Google. Cosmo, eHarmony, Insider. There wasn't a magazine or website that didn't weigh in on why you shouldn't date your boss. He holds power over you, he overlooks your faults, your colleagues will hate you. Oh, yeah, one more tiny itty-bitty thing. You'll lose your job. Fired. Or be forced to quit. No matter how you spun that bottle, dating your boss was a recipe for a last place in line at the unemployment office. Rachel tucked her feet under her on the couch and watched the rain outside her front window. Owen was at school, not due home until 3. She should probably be painting or removing the casing around the door that attacked her. Something. Instead, she stared at the drops of water falling from the sky, contemplating her life, which was stupid. She'd only known Jason for a few days. It didn't matter that he was the only man who had turned her head in close to a year. Wait, more like a year and a half. What did she know about him anyway? Aside from the driving himself into a ditch or his thoughtful thank you gifts. He was gorgeous. She knew that. Rachel shook her head as if her brain was an etch-a-sketch that would remove the image of him. She tapped her finger against her knee. What did she know about him? Jason Fairchild. She jumped up from the couch, caught herself when her head swam, then moved with a little more caution to grab her laptop from the dining room table. Once settled, she Googled again. She'd Googled potential dates in the past, but never, and she did mean never, had there been so much information about one person who was interested in her. He had a Wikipedia page. Rachel closed her eyes. How could anyone who had their own internet encyclopedia page be interested in dating her? She started there. CEO of Fairchild Charters, which he owned jointly with his two brothers. Yeah, yeah, she knew all that. Net worth. Rachel rubbed her eyes. How could anyone who needed a ride from her be worth that many zeros? He'd taken over the role of CEO after the unexpected death of his parents. Rachel found herself following the bouncing ball of Beverly and Marcus Fairchild. They weren't even 60, and both of them fell out of the sky while on a short flight in bad weather. Some reports suggested a lightning strike, others said pilot error. The brothers argued against anything their father could have done to cause the plane to crash. She found a picture of the Fairchild brothers standing over their parents' graves at a funeral. A tear dropped off her cheek. Jason stared forward, while Glenn, the man she'd met today, had his arm around the youngest son, Trent. Her gaze found Jason again. Chin high, his eyes glazed with loss. The picture had been taken 8 years before. Sadly, Rachel understood death all too well. She moved on. The information on Jason's personal life was limited to appearances at charity and corporate events. Most of the time he arrived solo, or on occasion he would have a date that consisted of a family friend or colleague. He wasn't one to have the paparazzi following him, so Rachel found herself back on his Wikipedia page. He lived in Connecticut. She knew that. His philanthropic efforts were for orphaned children, and the company was actively working with borderless doctors and organ transfers. She had questions about the latter part of that equation. Why was this something she had to look up to hear about?
Wouldn't Fairchild Charters want to advertise that information? A company with a heart? Literally? She wondered just how much money the companies she worked for gave up for these efforts. She bounced around again, this time on social media. She hashtagged Fairchild Charters. The usual shout-outs came from passengers who weren't used to flying in private jets, friends of those who were paying the bill. Most of this she'd seen while doing her research on the company's marketing. She added borderless doctors to her search and found a few old splashes of information, mainly about Trent Fairchild and his wife, Monica. For the next hour, she read the media's take on their story, starting with a tragedy in Jamaica and ending in Trent being the first of the Fairchild brothers to get married. She wanted to know more about that. The front door opened, pulling her out of her research.
"What are you doing home?" she asked Owen.
He looked around as if she'd asked something crazy.
"School's out? What are you doing home?"
"It's early." Only the time on her computer said it was after 3. Apparently the Fairchild family did a good job of keeping her busy all afternoon.
Oh, why are you home? Get fired?
She jerked. No, of course not. Why would you ask such a thing?
I was joking.
Owen blew past her, straight to the kitchen. Her heart raced at the mere mention of getting canned. I wasn't feeling well.
And you look like crap.
She scowled. I should probably be telling you not to talk that way. He laughed.
Yeah, probably.
She heard the pantry door open, the rustling of paper, suggesting junk food.
How about an apple?
Owen laughed as he left the kitchen and ran up the stairs to his bedroom with a bag of chips and a can of soda.
I suck at this mom thing.
In an effort to make up for her lacking parenting skills, Rachel cooked something that required more than boiling water. While she wouldn't be winning any culinary awards anytime soon, her chicken casserole had a fair amount of vegetables that should counter some of the junk that sustained Owen's metabolism. The pain in her head had eased as the day went on, even though the bruise was at its peak. Or so she hoped. Either way, she was going to work in the morning and went to bed early to ensure she had enough rest. Once in bed, she took a minute to check her own personal social media pages. The usual kitten and kid pictures littered her timeline. There weren't many personal messages, even after she posted the picture of the snow she'd managed to get through over the weekend. No, it was as if her life in California never existed. She reminded herself that her closest friend was gone, and the time before Emily's death was buried in her illness. Fostering friendships to withstand a cross-country life hadn't been a priority. So, people forgot about her. To be fair, she wasn't going out of her way to keep in close contact with those back home either. She'd hoped that while she was clicking around on her media pages, someone would pop up who would spark a conversation, and she could vent about her current crazy life. That didn't happen. And instead of finding a friend to talk to, her mood plunged further down. Loneliness had a cousin named Self-Pity, and she was a bitch. Picking up the phone to talk to Julie about her dilemma was out of the question. Talking about it online was job suicide. Her mom would tell her to date the man, so she'd get fired and somehow be forced to move back to California, which couldn't happen even if Rachel wanted it to. She didn't have a sister, and her brother, as much as she loved him, lacked the common sense gene. He was 3 years younger than she was, and already had one divorce behind him. Relationship advice wasn't something she was going to go to Steve for. This was a job for Em. I shouldn't get anywhere close to him, right? Rachel glanced at the ceiling in her bedroom as if Emily was right there. Only there wasn't an answer.
You're not helping!
Still no answer. Not that she expected one.
She plugged her cell phone in by her bedside, turned off the light, and crawled under the covers. Even though her mind hadn't turned off all day, she managed to fall asleep quickly, and when she woke up, the image of Jason kissing her lingered over her morning cup of coffee. Jason knew Rachel was at her desk, and it took every ounce of willpower to not go over to see her himself. He knew if he started frequenting the marketing and PR departments, he'd churn the office gossip. He'd kissed her in a closed conference room without a witness, and he'd lay money that Rachel hadn't told anyone about his advance, since she was hell-bent on not dating him. He hated that his head was torn with these thoughts. For the first time in forever, a woman sparked his interest beyond the physical, and she worked for him. Yeah, he wanted to pretend she was managed by Gerald or even Glenn, but no. Her living was made by Fairchild Charters, of which he was the CEO. A technicality of being the firstborn was complicating his love life. Truth was, being the firstborn had always complicated his life. The expectations, the pressure of keeping everything together after his parents had died. With both of his brothers married and settled, he'd stopped offering all big brother advice, which was often mistaken as parenting words of wisdom. Truth was, Jason had felt the need to step into everything his father had left behind. It was surprising he hadn't had any major health problems. So why did he wake up at 2 in the morning, trying to figure out how to make Rachel forget who she worked for? The fact that he thought about convincing her that he was date-worthy, while at the same time concerning himself with who might have seen them kissing, was enough to send an older man to the hospital with chest pain. When he closed his eyes, he saw the flush that rose in her cheeks, the smile she tried to hide when she pulled away from his lips, the doubt in her eyes. He saw it all. While his head swam with the negativity of an office romance, his heart, and maybe another organ, suggested he continue the path he'd started down. A knock on his office door interrupted his thoughts. His 6 months pregnant secretary walked in with his acknowledgement. "I have today's schedule." He grasped a pen to make notes while she took the seat opposite him.
"How's Junior today?"
he asked. "Kicking way too much for my taste." Jason couldn't help but smile. Audrey had been his secretary for 4 years, and in those years, she was always either planning a wedding or picking out colors for a nursery. Like many New York executive women, her pregnancy hardly showed through the stylish office clothing and coats. She'd finally settled into shorter heels at the pleading of her husband, but that had taken 5 months to make happen.
"Don't push yourself," he found himself saying.
"You're sweet. I'm fine." She looked fine. He'd heard pregnant women had a glow about them, and he'd seen it for himself once Audrey revealed her status. "You have a meeting with Chuck and Gerald to go over the new marketing plan at 10. You have lunch with Mr. Luton at Fleming's." Jason jotted that down with a moan. Lunch with Matt Luton meant martinis, and the last thing Jason wanted on a Tuesday was a desire for a nap by 2. Some clients needed his attention, and martini lunches were part of the job. Audrey slid a paper across his desk with the heading, "Holiday Office Party." "I know you hate this, but it has to be done today. I tried to make it as easy as possible." The paper looked like a high school multiple-choice quiz. The first bullet point had the words gold, silver, white, silver and gold, silver and green, and gold and green, with checkboxes next to them.
"What is this?"
"I made it easy. Just check off the box with your preferences."
"It's Christmas," he said, as if she didn't know. "Red and green."
"Nope, can't do that. Remember the Starbucks cup debacle? 19% of the staff is Jewish. We don't want to offend." He doubted anyone cared as long as they got free booze and a bonus.
There has to be someone more qualified than me to do this.
Jason was pretty sure he'd said the same thing every year since he took over for his father.
I suggested you hire a coordinator last October, but you put me off, she reminded him.
So hire one now.
Audrey blinked a few times.
Every event planner in the city worth hiring is booked. Have been since the first week in November, which is why I bugged you in October.
He pushed the paper to the side, determined to put off the details again. His mother had always taken care of the office parties, and in the last year, he'd managed to enlist Monica and a couple of her family members to take care of some of the details for outside events. The annual holiday party wasn't one of them, but maybe he could wiggle out of it now that Mary had been added to the family.
I'll take care of it.
Audrey didn't look convinced. Today, I need to give the caterers the menu and the decorators a direction.
I got it. The first week in February, we hire an event planner.
I'll be out on leave at the end of January.
So the second week in January.
She took a note.
Do we have your temporary replacement yet?
He'd put Audrey in charge of finding 3 in-office candidates who could fill her shoes for the 4 months she was planning on taking off.
I will have a list for you before Christmas.
Perfect.
She stood and clasped her notepad to her chest.
Remember, I'm leaving today at 3:30 to see my doctor.
Which explained his lack of afternoon appointments. He grinned and tapped a finger on his holiday to-do list.
So this really doesn't need to be back to you until the morning.
She frowned.
Jason?
He laughed.
Fine, but if I leave something blank, you make the decision.
She turned and walked away.
I don't take laundry to the cleaners, or buy flowers for girlfriends, or pick colors for Christmas.
The first two he'd never asked of her. The last one, however... Her argument in years past was that food allergies made her the last person to ask about culinary choices, and she blamed being slightly colorblind for her inability to oversee the other part of event planning.
How about some coffee?
That I can do.
He chuckled as she walked out the door. The grocery store screamed Christmas, from the bags of candy on the end of every aisle to the music piped through the PA. Rachel reached for one too many sugary sweets and added eggnog to her cart. She didn't even care for eggnog. Still, like the obligatory fruitcake, one needed to buy it even if it just ended up in the trash on December 26th. Her phone pinged, letting her know she had a text message. She looked at Owen's name and opened her messages.
Get frozen pizza.
Rachel turned back toward the frozen aisle.
And soda.
How about juice? A frown emoji preceded his response.
I'm 15, not 5.
Rachel bought both. Her phone pinged again. She looked at the message, not the sender.
Silver and gold, or gold and green?
She paused. Is this a trick question?
I'm planning the Christmas party.
Rachel scratched her head.
What party?
She hit send before she realized it wasn't Owen who was texting her. No, it was Jason, the man who she'd thought about all day long at work and yet hadn't seen or heard from once. To tell the truth, she was surprised and slightly disappointed he hadn't made an excuse to talk to her, even though it would have been a mistake to do so.
The company Christmas... Excuse me? Holiday party.
Rachel moved out of the way of a woman trying to get to a box of Dr. Pepper and huddled over her phone. Wait, you run a billion-dollar company and you don't have someone else planning the Christmas party?
Long story, starting with my mother. I'll tell you when we pick up your Christmas tree tomorrow night. So, silver and gold, or gold and green?
Oh, you're smooth, she muttered to herself.
Golden Green, tomorrow is a bad idea.
He didn't take long to reply.
My phone is about to die. Pick you up at 7. Dress warm. It's supposed to snow.
Her fingers moved fast. I told you we can't date.
He didn't reply.
Jason!
Nothing.
I don't believe for a minute your phone is dead.
Still nothing.
Jason! Zillion-dollar company CEO and he doesn't have a charger.
She tossed her phone into her purse and made her way to the checkout.
Chapter 7. Rachel must have checked her messages a dozen times an hour, every hour, right up until she left the office the next day. Jason had her in the palm of his hand. If she made a personal appearance in his office on the premise of canceling their tree-buying date, she'd create the very gossip she was trying to avoid. If she didn't, he'd show up on her doorstep. She practiced how she was going to blow him off in person and give him a little piece of her mind about ignoring the dozen answer your messages she'd left on his cell phone. That was until she closed the door leading in from the garage and was greeted by Owen.
Hey.
Hey back, she said.
We're getting a tree today, right?
Oh, shit.
I moved the couch away from the window to make room.
She followed Owen from the back door through the kitchen and into the living room. Sure enough, Owen had made room for a tree and had even pulled the vacuum out and cleaned in places that hadn't seen attention since before they'd moved in.
Looks like someone is excited.
He smiled.
Mom would want us to get a tree and make the most of what is gonna suck without her.
Rachel stared straight ahead as his words sank in.
Yeah, she would.
What time is stranded car guy getting here with the truck?
7, she said absently.
I'll pop a pizza in the oven so we're ready to go. He's not coming for dinner, right?
No. No, he wasn't coming for dinner, and now she wasn't going to be able to deliver her premeditated speech.
Cool.
Owen disappeared into the kitchen, leaving her staring at the empty space in the living room. She closed her eyes, huffed out a long-winded breath, and went upstairs to change. Jason turned onto Rachel's street, his hands gripping the wheel. 16. She had texted him 16 times telling him they couldn't date. She scolded him for not returning her texts, accused him of ignoring her to get his way. He deserved her wrath and was, in fact, ignoring her texts. Now, if she'd started saying things he wanted to hear, perhaps his phone would have miraculously returned from cell phone hell. The fact that she didn't outright tell him to stay away gave him comfort that she wouldn't close the door in his face. It didn't hurt that he was her boss, as she had pointed out many times. Not that he would hold that against her if she really wasn't interested. But she was. If she wasn't, she wouldn't have flirted with him over the phone. That was his theory, and he was sticking with it until she proved otherwise. He was 30 minutes early. An extension ladder rattled in the back of the truck, a hammer sat in the front seat, and hooks used to hang Christmas lights filled a bag from a local hardware store, along with a timer and outdoor extension cord. He wasn't about to see what damage she could do to her face with a ladder, if a simple kitchen door gave her the shiner she'd come to work with on Monday. He'd wiggled the details out of Gerald and earned the man's unwanted advice about inter-office relationships. Gerald had worked with Jason's father long before Jason finished college. He was filling in as the head of marketing and at the same time keeping the company broker management in line. Gerald had worked in just about every end of Fairchild Charters, with the exception of the mailroom. Anytime they lost a senior manager, Gerald was the one they called on to help fill the seat. He said he enjoyed the diversity, and the truth was, once under his guidance, the levels he managed took care of themselves. The man was invaluable. He was also fast approaching retirement, something Jason didn't want to think about. Rachel's driveway was empty,
But lights inside the house gave him hope that she hadn't stepped out for the night to avoid him. He removed the ladder from